Hello, my love tribe. Welcome to Heartblend Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Christian, and today we're going to enjoy a wonderful conversation with one of our new guest speakers. So I hope you're excited and we're ready to dive in. If you have any questions or want to know more about the guest speaker, definitely go to the description box so you can get to know who they are and check out all of what they have to offer. So definitely stay tuned and we'll get started right after this message. Hello, I am here with James Spelt, and I am so excited. He's going to share a lot with us on getting our minds in the right place, especially when it comes to a poverty mindset. So welcome, James.
Thanks, Lindsay. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Absolutely. I am so excited to hear everything you're going to share with us. I know you have your book, Hope Realized, that you have released, and it's good, and I'm just excited to hear more. So yeah, happy to have you. Could you share a little bit about just yourself and how you got here?
Sure, I'd love to. Yeah, so I live in Maryland, just outside of Baltimore, and I am married, two kids. I always like to kind of jokingly say I have two kids, two dogs, two cats, and three hermit crabs.
Full house.
Yeah, for sure. But that's kind of where I am now. I'm a business owner, also continue to do work in Nicaragua, which I know we'll probably briefly talk about at least as far as how we got here. My background, you mentioned my book, Hope Realized, is really around the time that I spent in Nicaragua. I lived there for 3 years. You know, I've had a journey to get to living there. Obviously, it wasn't like one day I woke up and, hey, I'll just move to Nicaragua, but did spend 3 years living there and working in community and economic development and working with people that are in poverty and kind of thinking about, okay, why are they in poverty and what is holding them back, both practically and spiritually or emotionally. And so that, as I came back from Nicaragua, 2015, moved there in 2012, I decided to go ahead and write a book about it. And just kind of started writing, and eventually it turned into a book that I released recently. And so, yeah, I'm excited to be able to share more about my journey, what I've learned about the role hope plays in really addressing poverty. And as you said, poverty mindset, because certainly we all can deal with that and suffer with that. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely. And I love that, you know, you kind of really bring forth the prayer piece and faith, because that's, I think, one of the challenging pieces is when you're feeling that pressure of whatever environment you're in, or just kind of feeling like nothing's changing, you know, kind of faith just kind of starts to diminish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, super interested in hearing more about that. Just kind of give me a little background on, like, maybe how did it feel going into those spaces? I'm sure it felt very different than what you're used to. I'm a little bit familiar with Nicaragua, and just kind of how it is there. I have never been, but just learning about the area, I know it's a vast difference than from obviously being in America.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I actually, the first time I went there was in 2007, and I was kind of coaxed along to going there. My family had gone the year before on a mission trip, and I graduated from college and went into financial planning, financial advising, and kind of decided I was going to be the guy that would just send the check and not the guy that went. And so my family, though, said, no, you should come. So I decided the next summer to go ahead and go down. And it definitely was significantly different than what I was used to, you know, the kind of relatively comfortable life, grew up, you know, in kind of a middle-class family, you know, had a pretty normal, stable upbringing. And so going there, we had visited the mission trip in particular was to an orphanage. And so we were working with kids that either had no parents, or because of the economic situation in Nicaragua, they were what we would call economic orphans. So their family had basically sent them there because they couldn't take care of them and provide them opportunities. And so you can imagine just the challenges that creates. And the orphanage itself exists within a community that's extremely impoverished, a community called El Cañon. And it's El Cañon in Spanish translates in English to the canyon, and it's literally down this hill that you would have no idea kind of it existed if you didn't go down in there. Mm-hmm. And it's probably 50-60% unemployment rate, an underemployment rate, and you know, everything you would think of as far as the byproducts of poverty, with hunger and lack of education and just people feeling hopeless. So yeah, as I journeyed down there and started to get to know people a little bit over the next few years, I continued to travel back. My parents actually ended up adopting a 15-year-old girl from there. I started to interact with people more. And, you know, it kind of went from what we often think of as poverty, you know, on maybe the TV screen on a Catholic Charities commercial, as just this idea and this concept, or mm-hmm. this major issue that we have to deal with as a world, to being people that had names. And so whether that's Josue mm-hmm. or Marie Jose or Sophia, you know, other, I could keep going down the list, but I started to realize and see that there were people that were just as capable and as intelligent as I am and was at the time, if not more, and that they seemingly were stuck in this situation of poverty, and I was not. And so it started to force me to kind of ask some questions about why do people end up in these situations, despite the fact that we are equal, you know, in mm-hmm. Many senses. And so there was nothing particularly special about me other than the opportunities I'd been given. And so as I started to explore that, certainly it, you know, made me uncomfortable, made me ask some questions, like I said, of myself and my life, and challenged me to think bigger about the world and you know, what's actually out there, you know, and what most people actually deal with. And so, yeah, it was challenging from that perspective. And then when I eventually did move there, and certainly that was uncomfortable because I grew up on the East Coast of the United States. You know, I tend to kind of like order to some degree, and mm-hmm. culturally things are just very different there. And so mm-hmm. it was a challenge to my system of, I wrote in the book a little bit about just how I had to deal with the idea of más o menos, that things don't always happen exactly as they're planned or at the mm-hmm. Exact moment, because things are much more relational in mm-hmm. Nicaragua than they are in on the East Coast of the United States. And so it was a bit of a shock to the system of just how things worked, but it has taught me a lot along the way about myself, about, you know, just being more open to you know, not having to have things exactly the way I perceive. So and then certainly I've learned a ton about poverty and the poverty mindset through that time. And so certainly would love to get into that.
Oh, yeah, you know, definitely. I'm really intrigued. So what was kind of what did you observe that was the difference between your mindset and someone else's mindset that was kind of dealing with that poverty?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, kind of going back to what I had said, I met people there, and I started to build some relationships. I actually had the chance to travel back there a few times. I visited a coffee farm. I talk about in the book how I kind of accidentally promised to connect them with Starbucks, and I learned that was not a good plan, because I had no ability to do that. So that was a learning process for me. Mm-hmm. But as I started, and why I mentioned that is as I started to kind of say, okay, well, maybe I don't completely understand the problem or the solution, I had to take a step back and say, well, let me learn a little bit. Let me get to know people a little bit more and learn what the issue is. And, you know, what I found as I started to do that was the byproducts we often think of when we think of poverty. So I named some of them earlier, but, you know, hunger, unemployment, educational issues, we could keep going down the list. They are often what we point to when we think of poverty. But what I've found is that they are really byproducts of something much deeper. If you were to think of it almost like an iceberg, mm-hmm. you know, the iceberg, basically 10% of an iceberg is above the surface, while 90% is below. And mm-hmm. that 10% that we see is being fed by something much deeper. And what I found that to be is hopelessness. Mm-hmm. And I actually call it the lie of hopelessness, because I don't believe anybody is truly hopeless. Mm-hmm. But both hopelessness from a practical sense, so the lack of a real opportunity to mm-hmm. move beyond your current realities, whether that's you know, a job, education, you could go down the list, mental health issues, things of that sort. And then the lack of a clear identity. So the belief that you were created for less than, and that nothing can ever change in your life, mm-hmm. that those two things, both practical and spiritual hopelessness, is what really feeds and perpetuates poverty and keeps it moving forward, despite all of the investment that we've made to try to change it. Certainly we've made progress, but there still seems to be something missing. And I believe it's, you know, the need to address both of these root issues. And so as I've learned, you know, about poverty mindset, a lot of it comes down to this idea of hopelessness, that, you know, you've kind of decided or been convinced, whatever way you want to think about it, that nothing can ever change, and that that your environment basically reinforces that. So, you know, in the examples that I'm giving, so in El Cañon, for example, you know, there's not a lot of opportunity there. You know, no one's going in and saying, let me build a business in El Cañon and create jobs for people, mm-hmm. or you know, let me invest in this particular infrastructure issue. And so the environment itself kind of says, like, yeah, you are hopeless. And then mm-hmm. because that's been reinforced, people often get kind of caught up in this picture of themselves that, you know, nothing can ever change. And that certainly can be true of us, whether we live in poverty or not, right? That we mm-hmm. get stuck in a mindset of you know, this is just where I am, and nothing will ever change for me. In mm-hmm. poverty, it plays out, you know, in a way that kind of holds people back from reaching their God-given potential. But that can be an issue for all of us. So, mm-hmm.
yeah, absolutely. I think we all get stuck in our own lack senses of thinking sometimes, mm. you know, in whatever the area of our lives may be. But that's huge. And I don't think that a lot of people think about that piece. And I love that you tapped into that. And because I find that sometimes, like, people that may be in, you know, impoverished areas, they're struggling and they may receive help, or like these short spurts of help, like, oh, here's some food and mm-hmm. here's this. And well, that runs out, you know? And so it's yeah. like, what can you do to kind of help shift it to where they can sustain themselves? So how did it start to shift? Did you notice a shift, and what kind of influenced them to shift, or was there like a language barrier? Do you speak Spanish?
I do now. I didn't at the time. That's another funny story.
Yeah. So how did you influence the hope with having that language barrier? It's like, you know, draw pictures or.
Right. Yeah. Like, how I could tell you all kinds of stories about me, like thinking I spoke Spanish when I got there, and then realizing I didn't. And then trying, it's funny you say draw pictures, because, one thing I've learned, you know, with cultural differences, your examples and analogies don't always translate. You have to think about, oh, wait, that's a totally different, you know, that would yeah. be perceived totally differently in Central America than it would be here. So I've certainly learned a lot about that. But to be honest with you, I would say a few things. One, I think that this is going to sound maybe cliche-ish, but hope, you know, doesn't necessarily have a language. You know, I think mm-hmm. that it, you know, we all know what a real opportunity looks like, when, you know, somebody provides you with the opportunity to move forward with your life. They're actually investing in you for the long term, saying like, hey, I will get behind you. I'll give you a job. I'll provide education resources, things of that sort. And then when, you know, it is harder, obviously, on the spiritual end, where the identity, what I would say reframed identity is another way I look at it. That part, certainly the language barrier does play a role, but showing people that they are what I say created by God, who loves them on purpose and for purpose. And so mm-hmm. kind of shifting that concept does play. There is obviously verbal communication with that, but a lot of it was, one, learning myself, but two, being willing to partner with other people that did speak Spanish, you know, Nicaraguans. So we have a staff down there now. I continue to work with Nika Works, the organization that I was working with there. But we also work with community leaders in the communities in which we work. And so we would, you know, use work through them as a catalyst to reach people. And sometimes that would help break down the language barrier as well. But some of it too is, I would just say, like, a willingness to continue to show up. and to show people that you really truly believe in them. Because like you said, a lot of times we'll be willing to maybe do the short-term help, the thing that maybe, you know, hey, we'll give you some food, or we'll give you some clothes, or something that might, you know, help them in the short term. But that long-term investment is really what makes the difference, both practically and spiritually, I believe. And so shifting from, you know, hey, we're just here to give you a handout, to know we're here to say we believe in you is a totally different thing. And I would say that I was actually having this conversation with somebody yesterday. You know, I think the reason why we often go to short-term solutions is we believe people in poverty are as hopeless as they do, if not more. You know, and so we're like, well, they're not ever nothing's really ever going to change. So I'll just give them some food to help them through today. And certainly there are instances and situations where that is necessary and helpful. But if that's all we do, the situation is not going to change. And so, so yeah, I would say when you said communicating, some of it was working through people. Some of it was just my skills developing in Spanish. But a lot of it was just by action too, you know? And so, those were the things I can think of that really made a difference.
Wow. So did you provide more jobs there, or how did they come to you? How did you reach other people that were in that area? And just kind of how did they start changing their lives? I presume their lives are completely changed now.
Yeah, some certainly. I mean, the reality is that, you know, addressing an issue like poverty is a long-term commitment. You know, it's messy and full of heartbreak, and you have to be willing to kind of say that. You know, there's this Greek proverb that says societies thrive when old men or old people are willing to plant trees under which shade they may never sit. And it's kind of that idea, I think, with addressing poverty, is being willing to say we're here for the long term, even if we don't see all the solution. But certainly we have started to see shifts, and in some cases, you know, seen people that have moved, you know, beyond their current situation. But a lot of it, so what we do in a lot of ways, and what I was able to do, is a few different things. So vocational training, so providing you know, training or jobs for people, whether that's, we have a bike shop we developed, so we did some training there, as well as opening that bike shop to provide employment. We ship used bikes down from the U.S. that are then sold in Nicaragua. It's called the Nika Bike Shop. We do some carpentry vocational training that, again, gives people skills, and the hope is that eventually we'll be able to actually develop a furniture business out of that and provide opportunity where they can go off and do their own thing. We do quite a bit of agriculture vocational training, helping people to you know, have better food security, whether that, you know, if they have a small garden, or we've done larger agriculture development, which again develops jobs and trains people in the skills to grow. Actually growing sweet corn right now, which is not a super common crop in Nicaragua, but is used and is expanding. And so we've done things of that from a practical sense. And then we've also invested in and partnered with people that invest in education for kids and provide medical care. I give an example. I'll give you one example of somebody in the book that I talk about. Her name is Brenda, and she is from a rural community, very impoverished community in the northern mountains of Nicaragua. And I was out there with a group visiting the community with a guy named Roher that's actually from there. He has an amazing story, but from there, and he now lives in the U.S., but still goes back and invests in that community, as well as 17 other villages around that area. And we met Brenda and her mom, and Brenda had a bandana on her head, and we were coloring, you know, out. If you can imagine, it's kind of an open air school in this community that has no running water, no electricity, very inaccessible. And we're out coloring with the kids, and, you know, she just has a bandana on her head. We wouldn't have thought anything of it, but her mom came up to Roher and a couple of the other people that were with us and said, I need help, basically. My daughter has a medical issue. And she brought her daughter over, Brenda, over, and she started to unwrap her bandana. And as she unwrapped her bandana, it exposed this infection that was happening. And basically, it's an infection that is caused by water, you know, so they would get most of their water from the creek and they would bathe and things of that sort in the creek, but animals mm-hmm. and things of that sort would go in as well. So mm-hmm. animal feces and things of that sort are in the water, and mm-hmm. well, it was an infection that, you know, and if they lived in Maryland where I'm from, you would go to the urgent care, or maybe if you let it go long enough, you might go to the emergency room and you would get treated and that infection would go away. But in Avianas, that option isn't available. And that infection can actually eventually, you know, travel to the brain and can be obviously a huge issue. And so she was basically like, hey, can you help my daughter? And we didn't know really what to do other than, because of the situation, we said, well, we can bring her with us. And so we brought Brenda and her mom with us back to Managua, the capital city, which is about 2.5 or 3 hours away. Mm-hmm. And we're able to connect her with the hospital, and she was able to get care that helped to heal the infection. And then eventually Brenda ended up staying in the area. I'll shorten the story, but Brenda ended up staying in the area to get education, and found that she was incredibly intelligent and that, you know, she had a bright future ahead of her if she was willing to grab onto it. So again, those are two examples of practical mm-hmm. hope in the sense of medical care and then education. So it's not always just, it is often, you know, providing jobs and things of that sort, but it can also be practical hope in mm-hmm. other senses. And so Brenda is still, she's a 20 something kid, you know, still on her journey, but you know, she's certainly, I think the future is bright for her. And mm-hmm. you know, I don't know that she would be alive today without that situation. And I think it's completely shifted her mindset. But you know, I could give many, you know, many other examples of people that we've seen change and are moving forward you know, towards a better life. And so, wow. Yeah. So those are some of the things that we do.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love that it's really an organic sense. It's not, from my perspective, a lot of times there's a lot of this like, yeah, we're helping, see? And, and it's kind of a forced help. Like, mm-hmm. I get it. Like, everyone has like a, you know, a kind of thing that they do, whether they go give shoes or food or whatever. But I love that it's just so open to where it's like, people feel safe. Obviously, they feel safe enough to come to you. And I was just kind of like imagining everything as you're telling me, and I'm sure I was nowhere near the capacity of what it actually was, but just having that understanding of things that, one, like, it's so easy for us, like, we kind of take it for granted, like, oh yeah, what do you mean, like, just go get help. But just knowing that that's just not, you know, available as much. And then also just the standpoint of like, people want to feel good about themselves and have something that they can contribute. I think that we're all naturally designed to be purposeful.
Yeah.
And so having a skill or having something, whether you know, continue with that or not, but we need that mm-hmm. in order to feel like, you know, we're naturally independent people. So I find that when we're really dependent on other things on a regular basis, we become more depressed. We like to have something that we feel good about ourselves with, you know, contributing to others. And so I love that you provide that, you know, capability or that door that can be open. So I love all of what you mentioned, because a lot of people don't think about that part. They just see the end result and they try to help in those immediate situations, but you really have to go to the root of the cause.
Yeah. I mean, we try to address it in a community-led change kind of way. So we're mm-hmm. going in and we're kind of listening and we're saying, well, what assets exist here? And then what can we do to enhance that, to provide opportunity, you know? And so that is very much the way it is organic, and it's messy, and it's not as formulaic. So sometimes it's harder, but mm-hmm. I believe in the long term, you know, it's more successful and mm-hmm. and creates more change. And you brought up a great point too, with sometimes it's just showing people that they have the ability within them to do something. You know, mm-hmm. like you said, I agree with you. You know, we're created to create, in a sense, you know, we're created to want to be able to do something and to use the gifts that we have. And so mm-hmm. sometimes what people need is an opportunity to see that in themselves and exercise mm-hmm. that. And that's what I, when I talk about a real opportunity, that's really what that is. It's saying like, hey, you, we believe in your potential and we want to give you a real opportunity. And then sometimes in doing that, we get the opportunity, or maybe somebody we're partnering with gets the opportunity to speak truth into their life and say, look, you're created for more. You don't have to think of yourself as, you know, destined for, you know, nothing, or a life of less than that. You actually can, you can move forward, that you were created to reach whatever your God-given potential is. And, you know, it can be easy to think of that as, well, so are you saying if they have spiritual hope that everything's going to be perfect? And that's not what I'm saying. It's more of saying, when you have a clear picture that you were created on purpose and for a purpose, you have a reframed identity, you're able to continue to move forward despite the challenges around you. And so that, combining those two things, that real opportunity and that reframed identity, is where we've seen real change happen. Whether that's change, you know, that we've been a huge part of, or if it's even observed change that I've seen happen in other people. So
Yeah, that's so inspirational, especially because we're a communal people, and especially people in different countries, I think, are even more communal than we are. We can get a little siloed here, because we have access to all the stuff and we're like, I don't need anyone, whatever. But we do. But I think that it's a little bit more, like I said, communal, tribal, and a lot of the different cultures. So if they can be able to witness seeing someone else get out of that mindset or change their lives, and they're coming from the same space, that's got to be incredibly inspirational. Like, maybe I can change, or maybe things can be different, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're definitely right. And we've seen that, you know, where it definitely makes a difference when someone can say, hey, look, I came from the same community that you're in, or I live here even, and I'm starting to make a difference in my life. You know, hey, why don't you take advantage of the opportunities that exist, or maybe look at yourself differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure, as you've, now, how long have you been there?
So I lived there for 3 years. I've been going to Nicaragua, I guess, for, let's see, 15 years, but kind of working there for the past 10 years. So, working with NicoWorks, I lived there from 2012 to 15, moved back, and now we have a staff, Nicaraguan staff, that works there, and I continue to travel there a few times a year, to partner with them and support.
Wow. And I'm sure that has drastically added value and like made you feel more purposeful as well too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things I talk about again in Hope Realized is, and again, I had a conversation with somebody yesterday, is that, you know, when we bring hope to other people, we find more hope for ourselves, you know? And so I think there's something really beneficial about jumping in and saying, hey, I'm going to make a difference in someone else's life, even for yourself, even if it's just, you know, I mean, obviously it's not selfish, but the selfish motivation part of it is it actually will help you to feel more hopeful, and to not kind of get stuck in your own world, if that makes sense, by being willing to step out and say, I'm going to bring hope to someone else. So yeah, I would, as much challenge as it's created in some senses, you know, or the past 10 years, like, I would never give any of it back. I wouldn't be nearly as excited about my own life and about what I believe is possible for people in poverty and for really any of us, without having gone through and continuing to work with people trying to create change. So
absolutely. And I actually was just in Baltimore a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was there for work. And so I know that area also has a lot of poverty in that area as well. Is it the same, do you think, the same mindset that gets someone in that space, especially when here in this country where we've got, you know, you can go down one street and it's a low income, and then you can go down 20 minutes and it's a totally different reality, and people can see that there's different resources or see different possibilities, but yet they still kind of stay stuck.
Yeah, I think it is the same. You know, it looks different. The resources, as you said, available in to at least some degree are different. Mm-hmm. But I think the issue, the lack of a real opportunity and the picture mm-hmm. we have of ourselves, our identity being kind of caught up in this idea that, you know, I wasn't created for anything or I was created for a life of less than, I think mm-hmm. that plays so much into what we see with poverty anywhere, you yes. know, and for all different reasons, depending on where you are. But yeah, I think that's the same, you know, in Baltimore City. I do some work. I volunteer occasionally with an organization that works in a school in particular in Baltimore City, an organization called Appy Time for Learning. And they do incredible mm-hmm. work with kids in West Baltimore. Mm-hmm. But in that community, you know, all the elements of poverty that you see in Nicaragua, they're there in a different form. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's really much different from the root cause standpoint. You know, again, going back to that picture of the iceberg, that mm-hmm. There's a need of real hope, not just like I hope something changes, the wishy-washy hope we often think of, but real hope mm-hmm. In the form of a real opportunity and a reframed identity. Because the people that live, the reality is the people that live in that area of West Baltimore are just as capable as I am, mm-hmm. just as intelligent as I am, but for, you know, many different reasons are trapped in this spot. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm really thankful for people like Patricia Mack Preston, who runs Appy Time for Learning, that's investing in the mm-hmm. community there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I recently did a little bit of work with the organization Prison Fellowship. Have you heard of them?
Yeah.
So just being able to witness that as well, I could imagine where that mindset could start. And, you know, as kids, I feel like they don't have the awareness of the weight, you know, of how things are. And so they're just like, yeah, like whatever. So they're still like so moldable.
Yeah.
But, you know, every day as they grow, it just keeps getting in that reconditioning of what they're seeing, what their family is doing, seeing their parents in that state, you know, let alone what's been told to them. And I can imagine it's hard to steer that ship of the mind when you've had such a long period of time being conditioned in one space, as opposed to someone coming in and trying to instill it after that conditioning has been set, you know?
Yeah, no, it's definitely hard. Mm-hmm. It's definitely very challenging, I believe. And that's why ultimately I really think it comes down to creating, you know, again, I call it all in hope, but practical and spiritual hope and mm-hmm. investing in that way. And it might not be, I think oftentimes we want to say like, well, here's this solution and in 10 years or 5 years or 2 years, it'll be completely different. And it just mm-hmm. doesn't work that way.
No.
If we're willing to really invest and say, we believe in people and in their potential, then we're going to bring them the resources they need through a real opportunity. And then we're going to, you know, remind them or partner with somebody to help remind them that they were created on purpose and for a purpose, that I believe real change can happen. And I, you know, there are plenty of examples of it. And so, mm-hmm. you know, and some of even the examples that, you know, we see that maybe are not, you know, we often think of as an aberration. Well, that could be more the norm, I think, mm-hmm. if we create those opportunities for people to experience all in hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's tough, but I think, you know, even if you can just help one person, I mean, that has an amazing impact because mm-hmm. they'll remember, you know, how it impacted them and how their life has changed. And sometimes it's easier to listen to someone that's been in your shoes than seemingly someone on the outside. It's an illusion because we are, you know, capable, but I think it's sometimes easier for people to accept a truth from someone that it looks like they came from the same space.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Yeah, that mm-hmm. definitely plays a big role. And we can all, like you said, I think it's super important actually that we all play a role. You know, we each have something mm-hmm. to bring to the table. If we're willing to do it, and we can each make a difference, we just have to be willing to take a step. Mm-hmm. You know, I often tell people if you want to, if you're saying like, well, gosh, I'd like to jump in and make a difference. I don't really know where to start. I often tell them, well, get curious about one, yourself, what you believe, what you believe about people in poverty, what you believe about yourself, about where poverty might exist in your sphere of influence or in your community or neighborhood. And then think about maybe what you have to offer. You know, I went to that orphanage the first time. I did youth work with an organization called Young Life, but hanging out with kids in an orphanage didn't feel like exactly my gift set as far as what I had you know, studied in college and things of that sort. So I wasn't sure where my business background and leadership background played in. But as I started to explore, I realized, no, I do have something to offer and I can bring the gifts that I've been given and developed to make a difference. And so each of us, whether that's a teacher or someone that's just, you know, there are tons of different skills. I don't have to get on the whole list that we each have that we can bring to the table. So if we look and say, well, what can I bring to the table? And then we're willing to get connected maybe to somebody that's already working in that community. You know, as you said, maybe somebody that has relationships, that's already there and has done the hard work of investing, you know, getting connected to them. And then just being willing to take that step and say, well, hey, I'll bring what I have to offer to bring hope to someone else. And so I think if we can, the more people we can get to be willing to do that, the more chance we have of seeing hope realized in a lot of communities where we often think it's hopeless now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I love that. I love that for just all over the world. I think that it's kind of makes me sad a little bit just because I know that our natural design, we're designed to be so incredible, so amazing beings, and to feel like, you know, you're worthless or meaningless or not able to, you know, be anything more than what you actually are designed for just hurts my heart. But I love that you are kind of reinstilling truth back into people of what they are capable of being.
Yeah. I mean, that's what, yeah, exactly. That's what it's all about, is helping them realize what's inside themselves. You know, it's, you know, it's not hope, practical and spiritual hope isn't like, something that we give per se. I guess it is something we give, but you know what I mean? It's something we help bring out in people. They already have the God-given potential. It's helping them realize that it's in there.
Yes.
And then helping them exercise that in the form of a real opportunity. I mean, we all need that, right? I mean, I've had so many people give me opportunities in life. It's easy to say you're a self-made person, but that is almost never true. You know, somebody had to give you an opportunity at some point. You might have made the most of it, but somebody had to give you an opportunity at some point. So
We're all, you know, here to help each other in some way, whether it's just inspiration. I mean, I like to focus on leading by example. It's always so easy to tell people what to do, but just, you know, you'd make such a big impact just by living your life in a, you know, the best way for you and the most valuable and helpful way, healthy way. You never know who's watching and who sees that. And that can truly, you know, just kind of spark a new direction for them. So
you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And, I think that that's a good point that you made. I love the fact that you bring in the spiritual and the practical hope, because some people view hope as wishing.
Yes.
And it's not the same thing.
No.
and so being able to, you know, take action and visualize or see how things could be in tandem is what kind of starts to instill that hope a bit more than, you know, maybe I hope this will work out and, you know, nothing's actually doing, nothing's actually being changed. So I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I actually talk about how like this sounds like the verb kind of hope or the noun kind of hope. Like one is kind of like this, hey, I hope my team wins.
Yeah.
And one is foundational. And one of the ways I like to compare it is it's like, you know, when I was a kid, I loved volcanoes and I thought they were neat. And I built a volcano out of baking soda and vinegar, right? And the science project kind of thing. And, you know, I thought I understood volcanoes until I actually went to Nicaragua and I got to drive up to the crater of a volcano and look inside and say, wow, this is one powerful force. And that's what, you know, when I think of like this real hope, when we actually come face to face with it, it changes our perspective of what it really is. It's not this wishy-washy feeling that we often think of when we think of hope. I mean, certainly that is a form of hope, but it's this foundational kind of hope that actually has power and can create change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really the seed mm-hmm. to like the catalyst of like that transition from the low space to the higher space. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, James, I loved everything you shared with us today. Is there anything else that you wanted to share as far as just like the stories or just, you know, anything that, any advice you would share with someone that's in this space right now of being in poverty?
Sure. Yeah. I would just say, to someone that's in that poverty mindset, is just, I would encourage you to realize that you might feel like your life is worthless, but that's just not true. And you might feel like you're hopeless and you're caught in hopelessness, but I believe hopelessness is a lie, and that you truly were created by a God who loves you on purpose and for a purpose. And that, that by seeing yourself, changing the way that you see yourself, and then, you know, finding a real opportunity, that real change can still happen, and that the situation isn't hopeless. And for people that are on the outside, you know, kind of saying, well, what do we do? Well, there's a lot of opportunity for us to bring hope in both of those ways. And so being willing to take that step and say, I'm willing to give back some of my, what I have in gifts and encourage other people can make a huge difference in that person's life, your own life, and in this world. You know, we're all, like you said, we're all connected. So we try to believe that we can be siloed and that things don't impact us. You know, we don't have to worry about that because it's not my problem. Well, the reality is that's just not true. We're all connected. Right. And, all of these problems, poverty is an issue that we all have to deal with in some form or another. Mm-hmm. And I think the reality is the fact that many people feel hopeless makes us feel more hopeless. So as mm-hmm. we are willing to address hopelessness in others, we'll find more hope for ourselves in that way too, because we'll build a more hope-filled world. Mm-hmm. And so I would just say, you know, I believe that that there is a ton of hope. And that's why I said hope realized. You know, it's this mm-hmm. idea that hope can be realized, that it's not just this, like you said, the wishy-washy feeling, but it's this thing that that is foundational and exists and is a possibility. And so I would just encourage people to, not give up, you know, whatever side of the poverty coin you're on, to not give up and keep moving forward. And that's what, I hoped in some ways my book would help remind people of, is that, there is a lot of opportunity for real change still.
Yes, absolutely. James, thank you so much. This was amazing. I really did enjoy this conversation. How can people get in touch with you or get your book?
Sure. Thanks. And I did as well. This has been great, Lindsay. You can find my book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, anywhere that you buy books. You can also visit my website, jameshbelt.com, and, find additional resources as well as the book there. Or you can look me up on LinkedIn or Facebook, James Belt. So love to connect with you and encourage you, and hopefully get encouraged by you as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Have an amazing rest of your day.
Thanks, Lindsay. You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.